We now bring in Barrett Salee, lead SEC college football writer and national college football video analyst for Bleacher Report. And Barrett, we hope you're hunkering down for a snowpocalypse headed your way.
I'm ready. I went to the store yesterday. We moved like 3 weeks ago, so we're still sort of all over the place. But I got all the essentials for the kiddos and essentials for the grown-ups, too, which included a trunk full of beer and wine. So I think are the most important ingredients to a good snowpocalypse.
Yeah, I was going to say milk and bread. Everybody's always talking about milk and bread. I'm like, I need some other things beside that
exactly.
To get through something like this.
Exactly.
But we'll jump right in here as Clemson and Alabama will take on each other on Monday in the college football playoff championship game. And it seems like you're on the Clemson bandwagon to win this game. What makes you think Clemson will win?
Yeah, I mean, I picked them in December, and I picked them now. I mean, I think that they're just a matchup problem for Alabama. And specifically, I think they that wide receiving core is so good, and Alabama's secondary is so untested that I think they're going to present a major problem. And you look back at last year, Deshaun at 405 yards. That was without Deion Kane or Mike Williams. Both of those guys are back. You look at Alabama's secondary, and they've faced teams that have actually been able to throw the ball. They haven't been that great. Ole Miss lit them up, Chad Kelly, and then Austin Allen threw for 400 yards against them. So, you know, I think they're a matchup problem, and they're really good at, keeping defenses on their heels with misdirection, with diverse play calling, creative play calling. So, on the flip side, you look at what Alabama's, where they should attack Clemson's defense. Well, they should attack their secondary. That's what Nathan Peterman did. That's what Jerod Evans did. Well, Jalen Hurts doesn't do that. They don't throw the ball deep. Jalen Hurts, I don't know what the stats are after the Washington game, but it was like 76% of his passes come within 8 yards of the line of scrimmage before the Washington game. They don't stretch the field. So, look back at last year, that's what Jake Coker did, and Jalen just doesn't do that. So I think Clemson wins. I think they win by a touchdown or more.
How surprised were you with what Clemson was able to do against Ohio State?
Not really. I mean, I picked them to win by double digits. I thought that Ohio State would have a little more success offensively, but not much, just because, again, Alabama and Ohio State are very similar in how they run their offense. And so, I wasn't surprised at all. Clemson's front seven is terrifying. Ohio State's offensive line was garbage. It has been all year. And JT doesn't stretch the field deep a lot like Jalen Hurts. So I wasn't terribly surprised that Clemson dominated the game. A little surprised that Ohio State didn't have a little bit more success. But look, in this, I think we all make referendums on playoff games. And Ohio State, I think, is being looked at as, oh, they're not worthy, they don't deserve to be there, and all that stuff. And that's just not true. They just were a matchup problem for Clemson was just a matchup problem for Ohio State. And I think Clemson presents the same matchup issues for Alabama.
Barrett Salee from Bleacher Report joining us. Barrett, I know you just said that you picked Clemson to win, but how much does the, I put this in air quotes, transition with Kiffin out and Sarkisian in, how much does that kind of factor into your decision a little bit, or your pick for the game on Monday?
It doesn't. I mean, Lane and Steve are basically the same guy. They come up with the same, coaching tree. They understand each other. They understand the game plan. Sarkisian was very instrumental in putting together that game plan on a weekly basis this year. So it doesn't change. I think the only thing that you may have to worry about in terms of at least the specific transition from a football perspective is how Jalen Hurts and Steve Sarkisian interact with each other on the sideline during a game. That's a different voice. I think Lane obviously will tell Steve how he, how to handle Jalen. And so I think he'll be okay. But that's the only issue. I think the broader issue is, well, how much does the preparation get affected by the controversy or the story? And a guy who wants no drama and wants the same process every single day, Nick Saban invited the questions. And on Tuesday when we were on a teleconference with him, he clearly got annoyed. Well, guess what's going to happen tomorrow? You're going to get a whole bunch of Lane Kiffin questions at Media Day, and it's going to be an hour long, and there's nothing Nick Saban can do about it. So, the distraction part is I think, what is the bigger issue. In terms of actual football, it's not going to be any different. The offense is going to be the same. The plan is going to be the same. It's just a matter of how Steve Sarkisian handles Jalen Hurts on the sideline, which he hadn't done before. But I would imagine he'd be okay. The game's always been about Jalen Hurts. Whether Jalen Hurts can win a game with his arm or not, that's what's going to determine the outcome of this game. And that'd have been the case whether it was Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, you or I, or anybody else, you know, coaching on the sidelines.
Was the offensive performance against Washington really what did Kiffin in, or do you think there was something that might have happened behind the scenes that we don't know about that might have ultimately caused them to go in this direction?
No, I don't think the offensive performance against Washington had anything to do with it. You know, in fact, I think that was directed from Saban because they knew they had Bo Scarborough in the back pocket. That was clear when Washington scored their first touchdown. They went straight down the field and scored, and at that point they knew it. If Nick was that frustrated with what Lane was doing, Nick would have told Lane. Nick yells at me all the time. And so I think they realized at the time anyway, okay, well, Clemson's secondary is where you need to exploit them, or Ohio State's secondary is really good. We got to get our guy comfortable in this situation. And so they tried some things, and it didn't work. So I think that was a Nick Saban directive from the get-go. I think I'm looking at anything to do with Lane getting fired. There were some issues behind the scenes for sure, you know, whether that be personality issues or whatever. The comments from the week prior about, you know, ass chewing, that had nothing to do with it. I think it was more, I kind of believe from what the folks I've talked to, the story about it being sort of mutually decided upon, I think that's pretty close to accurate. I mean, obviously, it's Nick Saban's decision, but what I think, just connecting some dots and conversations I've had, it does seem like, you know, Lane asked for a little bit of leeway in terms of doing some FAU stuff this week, probably too much. Nick Saban said no. They here's what we should do. Had a discussion and they all kind of came to an agreement and said, hey, this is the best course of action. And I'm sure Lane is disappointed, but I don't think he's really that torn up because he understands, you know, he was part of the decision-making process. So, that's why you have Sark there. And so I don't necessarily think it's as messy as people want to make it out to be.
Talking with Barrett Salee from Bleacher Report, what do you think of all this stuff that's going on? And since you're over in Atlanta, I know you get to see this with Rodrigo Blankenship, the Georgia kicker, and his email, or not his email. Well, he had one, but his dad's email to the media yesterday. This thing's getting really interesting.
Yeah, and apparently he apologized on his dad's behalf.
Yes.
He needs to be on scholarship. I think, you know, you look around the country, look how many kickers save games. I mean, I know Georgia beat Auburn. Where would Auburn be without Daniel Farley? I mean, that kid's a monster. And so Rodrigo Blankenship, I think, took a situation that was really uncomfortable, really unstable, and became a pretty reliable kicker. He wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. He needs to be on scholarship. And if Kirby Smart's going to try to go about business with walk-on kickers, he's not going to be the head coach at Georgia very long, because I know folks want to make fun of kickers and say they're not part of the team and they're weird and quirky and all that stuff. And most of that stuff's true. But they're also really important pieces. When you've got a guy you can rely on inside the 40 to get you at least three, you're living right. And so, you know, Rodrigo Blankenship maybe isn't that right there yet in terms of how good he is, but he's getting pretty darn close. So, I think if this doesn't change, it's going to come back and bite Kirby Smart for sure.
Now, obviously, the Bulldogs didn't have the season that a lot of fans here in Athens or around the state wanted them to have, but they do end 2016 on a good note, beating TCU in the bowl game, and what they've been doing in recruiting is very impressive. What do you think about the Dogs for 2017? Are they the prohibitive favorite to win the East?
I think they will be because, I mean, just look at the Liberty Bowl. Lorenzo Carter was awesome. Trent Thompson was defensive MVP. And the young core is great offensively with Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel coming back to lead them. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we talked about this earlier in the summer. This is basically a 24-month process for Kirby Smart. The roster was, I wouldn't say depleted when he got there. It was unproven, very unproven and underdeveloped. He did a good job developing it. You saw some of those pieces, you know, sort of set forward this year on the defensive front. And then you saw flashes of some explosiveness offensively, I think specifically Riley Ridley, but, you know, other guys as well. So, you know, I think you look around the division, you can't pick Tennessee again because of the way Butch mismanaged that roster and the fact that they lose a lot of folks. You can't pick Florida because even though they've won back-to-back, I think they've backed their way into that more than actually gone out and won it. Georgia, I think, is the one that's going to have the most improvement. So, yeah, I think they would be competitive favorites.
Talking with Barrett Salee from Bleacher Report, a couple of national questions to throw at you. What's your take on Joe Mixon? And I know he's not coming back to Oklahoma. He's going to the NFL. Has he paid his price, or should he be branded for what he did?
Well, I mean, he's going to be branded. The NFL doesn't care, which is a completely different topic. But, you know, the way it was mismanaged by Oklahoma is pretty appalling. And, you know, we all saw the video, and we're all outraged after seeing the video. But we all – I mean, I know personally I was kind of critical of it before the video came out. And I think the thing about it is, look, you don't take 2.5 years to apologize. Even if your legal counsel, you know, says you should do that, you know the video. You saw what happened. You lived it if you're Joe Mixon. And, you know, don't try to get off just because it's going to save your butt. If you messed up, mess up. Own up to it. Had he come out 2 years ago and said, look, I did something dumb. The video's going to come out. It's awful. I apologize. I'm trying to be a good kid. I felt like I was a good kid before. It was a momentary lapse of judgment, and it won't happen again. I don't think anybody's going to brand you for life for that. I mean, I just don't. And the way they went about it, you know, redshirting him. Look, redshirting is, you know, that was somewhat of a punishment. He was going to play as a true freshman. That's somewhat of a punishment, but I think waiting 2.5 years to apologize, even if it is because your legal counsel says so, that's not good. It just looks like you're protecting your players, which they were, and that's not the way this should go down.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you, too, from a national perspective, it looks like P.J. Fleck is headed to Minnesota. How much of a train wreck is that? It was that situation there with Tracy Clays.
It was bad. I mean, Tracy Clays got done wrong by his players because I thought actually he handled the protest situation as best as he could because there was nothing he could do to do the right thing. I mean, his players are going to threaten a protest without reading the report. That is really a reflection of society now, A, which is sad, but B, a horrible place to put your head coach. So, you know, they look for an out for him at Minnesota. They found it. And, look, I mean, P.J. Fleck's a good coach, and I think he'll do fine there. But, yeah, Minnesota is getting very Missouri-ish in terms of just a really hard place to win based on how players react to specific situations.
Hey, do you think the right guy won the Heisman Trophy? Because I thought after the ACC title game that Deshaun Watson had done enough, and I know that it just depends, I guess, on how you define the award, because some people think that a guy with losses like were had by Clemson and Lamar Jackson shouldn't win it because, you know, at the same time we saw Tim Tebow won it, I believe, with 4 losses when he did. So do you think that Deshaun Watson has a gripe for not winning the Heisman Trophy?
So I voted for Deshaun, so yeah, I think he does. You know, I think you have to look at the Heisman. Me personally, you know, when I look at it, it's three things. It's, you know, how good are you in terms of your production, you know, video game statistics? How valuable are you to your team? And Deshaun and Lamar both check those boxes. But then what do you lead your team to? And Deshaun clearly has Lamar beat in that department, so – you know, I think it does vary year to year. It's very subjective. Most outstanding player in college football is a pretty open-ended definition. And but those are the three things that I look at. And I think for this specific year, Deshaun Watson checks all those boxes. I know from a statistical standpoint, he's not where Lamar is, and that's fine. But so a lot of his interceptions, I think it was 7 at the time we voted, were really just dumb luck, bad bounce interceptions. I think to do what he did with the target on his back matters to me, and that's why I voted for him.
Now, before we let you go, I just wanted to ask if you had a way too early prediction for the 4 teams that will be in the playoff next year.
I don't yet. It's unfortunately, like, I want to pick Florida State, and I picked Florida State to win the national title this year. I'm kind of debating, okay, do I go down that path again? Because I think Florida State's going to be really good next year. I just don't know if I can bring myself to pick them again because – I think I'm right, but if I'm wrong, my God, the amount of people that are going to yell at me. I just don't want to do it.
Oh, man, I can't even imagine. You know, I see you battling with people from time to time on Twitter. And, yeah, as soon as you get something wrong, everybody's there to point it out to you. So good luck with whoever you pick. And thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Barrett.
Barrett Salee. From Bleacher Report, he is the lead SEC college football writer, national college football video analyst for Bleacher Report.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.